Your eyes and your vision are under attack, damaging blue light from the sun, your phone, your computer, your tablet, even light bulbs and car headlights is constantly bombarding you. The good news is our eyes actually already have a line of defense to counter the effects of blue light. This defense is made up of three pigments called carotenoids. MacuHealth with MicroMicell, the only supplement with the exclusive patent on all three macular carotenoids and MicroMicell technology.
Do your patients know what presbyopia is?
There are people who are afraid of the press.
Have you talked to your patients about multifocal contact lenses?
I've heard the bifocal, but not
right,
multifocal.
Do you need help with your multifocal strategy? Learn more at the conclusion of this episode. With more screen usage and indoor time, myopia, also known as nearsightedness, is increasing and getting worse in children. Now, certified eye doctors can prescribe MySight One Day, the first and only FDA-approved soft contact lens to slow myopia progression in age-appropriate children. Visit CooperVision.com to find a Brilliant Futures certified eye doctor near you. Good morning, I'm Dr. Kerry Gelbin. Welcome to Open Your Eyes Radio. Please listen as I discuss the newest information in the world of health, nutrition, and sports every Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Central Time on AM 1280 The Patriot. Also, please share your thoughts by emailing me at drkerrygelb@gmail.com. That's drkerrygelb@gmail.com. And visit my website at drkerrygelb.com. People may be surprised to hear that humans are a collection of trillions of microorganisms called the microbiome. It is now known that the microbiome is vital to our health. These tiny microorganisms impact our heart health, our mental health, our weight, our immunity, and even our athletic performance. The big question is, how can we use this emerging science to improve our overall health? Today's guest, the founder of Microbiome Labs, that's Microbiome Labs, and gut health pioneer, Karen Krishnan. Karen is a research microbiologist, has published many scientific papers. Karen recently published a book chapter on leaky gut or metabolic endotoxemia. Karen, thank you for joining me today.
It is a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
You know, Karen, you're a fan favorite when it comes to the microbiome. You know, when people want to know about the microbiome, they go to you. It's amazing the knowledge that you have on the microbiome. But I have to ask you, you know, the public doesn't realize, is there really a connection between health and these little organisms that live inside us?
You know, there absolutely is. In fact, we cannot function as a human without our microbiome. So if you think about our microbiome as being this massive collection of organisms that exist all over the human body, every part inside us, all everywhere around us and outside us. And in fact, they control the vast majority of biochemical functions that happen in the body. Just to put it in perspective for people, we have about 1.5 times more microbial cells in our system than we have human cells. And even more surprising, we actually have about 250 times more microbial DNA in our body than human DNA. So we have far more microbial genetics than human genetics, which means that the vast majority of biochemical functions that occur in our body, just being humans every single day doing the things we do, the vast majority of those are coded for by the microbes in our system.
You know, it's amazing. If you could talk about where 70% or maybe more, maybe 80% of the immune system is located.
Yeah, so the immune system is primarily located in the GI tract, so your gastrointestinal tract. You've got this massive surface area of digestive system in your GI tract, right? If you unfolded all your intestines and your digestive tract, it works out to about the size of a professional tennis court. So it's a huge surface area. And about 60, 70% or more of that surface area has immune tissue on it that's sampling the world around you and trying to make decisions as to what to attack and what not to attack. And all the while, every square inch of that surface area is also covered with microbes. And all of those microbes communicate with your immune system to try to aid and guide your immune system in conducting the most proper immune function in the body.
You know, they've done studies on hunter-gatherers and people that have the Western diet. What's the difference in the bacteria that lives in us compared to the hunter-gatherers?
The biggest difference is really the diversity of microbes. You know, our ancestors who were hunter-gatherers, foragers, they had a really vast, diverse microbiome in their system, which of course, as we talked about earlier, because the microbiome provides us functionality and genetics, it means that they had even more capability and even more functionality in their system, which allows them to adapt to more things, to deal with more stresses, to deal with more negative stimuli in their day-to-day lives. Now, today in the modern day, because we have so many things that kill microbes in our system, right? Everything from antibiotic use to the chlorine and fluoride in our drinking water, the pesticides all over our food systems, all the personal care products with antimicrobials in it and antibacterials and all that in our system, all of those kill our ecosystem. So the modern human, the Western human that's walking around the streets, has a small fraction of the original microbes that humans started off with.
You know, and COVID has made this a lot worse, but moms are running around after kids, you know, spraying their hands with disinfectants, not letting them play in the dirt. Can you talk about the hygiene hypothesis and why eating dirt or being, there was a, I think the movie called Eat Dirt or something like that. Why maybe we're being too clean.
We absolutely are. I mean, there's a whole amazing tsunami of evidence that has been generated and there's more is coming out that shows that we are overtly hygiene, right? We're trying to sterilize our homes. We sterilize our cars. We sterilize our bodies all the time. When you look at it in the microbial world, 99.99% of microbes are either beneficial or benign. It's a very small percentage that's actually harmful or pathogenic. And the thing is, most of the time, the harmful or pathogenic organisms are allowed to take hold because the other 99.9% aren't flourishing. Those microbes do a better job of controlling the problematic microbes than we ever could. Just to give people two examples, in Finland, they did a long-term study to understand why allergies and asthma were getting so bad in their children. They discovered it's because they were over-sterile. And so what they did is they took a number of daycare centers and they implemented dirt piles in these daycare centers. And they started having half the kids that go to daycare play in the dirt piles two or three times a week and half the kids not play in the dirt piles, obviously. And then they followed them for a few years and they found that the kids that played in the dirt piles actually had a lower incidence rates of allergies and asthma. There was another great study on moms and babies where they followed two groups of moms. Moms who, when the baby dropped their pacifier, the mom would pick it up and sterilize it and clean it with a wipe and give it back to the baby. The other set of moms were ones that would pick it up, put it in their own mouth and clean it, and then give it to the baby. The moms that did the practice of putting it in their own mouth and cleaning it had babies with lower incidence rate of immune issues, viral infections, allergies, asthma, and all that. So we know. It's very clear that we have to have a relationship with microbes. We have to have microbes around us. And if we diminish that by sterilizing things, it harms us at the end of the day.
And how do you reconcile, you know, for the people that are listening out there? Yeah, they want to wash their hands because they don't want to get a virus, but we still want to protect our microbiome. What is a happy medium?
Yeah, and you know, washing is really the key, right? So when you wash your hands with soap, it doesn't sterilize it in the same way that those antimicrobial hand gels would. And it provides a certain degree of protection without completely obliterating the beneficial microbes on your system. So washing your hand and having good hygiene is perfectly fine, right? You go to a restroom outside, you're in the mall somewhere, you go to the restroom, absolutely wash your hand after you come out of the restroom. But it doesn't mean that before you sit down and eat or before you put on a snack or put in a snack into your mouth, you need to clean your hands with hand sanitizers. So if you can avoid the alcohol-based sanitizers, the chlorine-based sanitizers, and then, of course, in your homes, you don't have to sanitize every surface of your home. If you bring home a raw chicken and you get raw chicken juice on your counter, counter, absolutely sanitize that. If you want to sanitize your toilet, absolutely. But most surfaces in the home don't require sanitization. In my home, for example, we clean most surfaces with a spray bottle of water with a couple of drops of essential oil, just for a nice smell, and we just wipe it down, right? We want to build a healthy microbial community in your surroundings.
Alessio Fasano, who I interviewed, has five pillars for autoimmune disease: genetics, the environment, which is the diet, increased leaky gut, intestinal permeability, the microbiome not functioning properly, and the immune system becoming hypervirulent. Can you, in the last 50 seconds that we're going to talk right now, can you make a comment about that?
Absolutely. His work is absolutely fascinating and pioneering in the world of autoimmunity. And he's absolutely right in that leaky gut is a key component to those pillars. In fact, if you have the other four and you don't have leaky gut, you will likely not develop autoimmune disease. And if you do have autoimmune disease, one of the most effective things you can do is reverse the process by correcting the leakiness in the gut. And the leakiness in the gut is determined by the number of microbes and what types of microbes you have in your GI tract. So it's a great place to start.
What is actually living inside us, Curran?
You know, so it's a really amazing, vast ecosystem that we have inside us. So we have viruses, we have bacteria, we have fungus, we have mold, we have protozoa, some people might even have amoebas. And then, of course, parasites are also a normal part of a lot of people's GI tract. So parasites can be things like worms, if you will. You know, all of these things are things that we've adapted and co-evolved with. And this is why we refer to a human actually as something called a holobiont. A holobiont is a superorganism. We are essentially a walking, talking rainforest, a very complex ecosystem where all these different species have to work together to perpetuate the health of the total, which is, of course, us, the host, right? So we have to pay attention to this ecosystem.
We have this ecosystem living inside us, all this bacteria, viruses, all these different organisms. So what does it do for our health? What does it do? It makes energy from food. What else does it do?
Yeah. So, you know, it's starting off with making energy from food, right? So bacteria and fungus to a certain degree play a very important role in our digestion and assimilation of nutrients from food. So our ability to take food that's coming in through our diet, break it down, extract the key components of the food, and then utilize those key components. We couldn't do any of that without the microbes in our digestive tract. On top of that, when the food that we cannot absorb moves into the large intestine, there's a huge number of microbes that'll convert that food into very essential nutrients that we don't get out of the food. They have to be converted and produced in the gut. One example of that are short-chain fatty acids. These are type of compound that are produced by microbes in the gut when they digest fibers, for example, and the short-chain fatty acids go throughout the body and support the immune system. They improve metabolic response, glucose control. They reduce inflammation and damage in the brain and other parts of the system. So they're really, really critical. And we can only get them from microbes breaking down fibers and producing them for us. So that's a very important example.
The short-chain fatty acids help make the mucus from the goblet cells in our stomach, in our gut, and it's used for protection. And we need butyrate for that. Now, can you talk about butyrate? And is it something people, you could buy butyrate and you could take it as a supplement. Should people be taking butyrate as a supplement to help that mucus layer within the gut as a protection?
You know, so butyrate as a supplement is a little bit mixed in terms of whether or not it'll get to the large bowel, which is where it turns on all of those mechanisms to rebuild that mucus lining. And that mucus lining that you mentioned is incredibly important, that there's an adequate level of mucus that covers your entire digestive tract, including your stomach, all the way down to your distal colon. A lot happens in that mucosal lining. Number one, most of the microbes that we are talking about, the friendly microbes, live in that mucus lining. Number two, our immune system makes a lot of immune decisions in that mucus lining. Number three, it also acts as a very important barrier to things like toxins and pathogens and viruses and all that penetrating through and entering into our system. So it is critically important. However, it's unclear whether supplemental butyrate actually increases that. We know that supplemental butyrate can certainly help in the small bowel, in the proximal part, which is the small bowel, the area closest to your stomach. But the large bowel, which is where you want a lot of that butyrate to rebuild that mucosa lining, you likely need endogenous production, which means production in your own large bowel. You can facilitate that by prebiotics.
So the microbiome in our gut, it makes energy, it regulates metabolism, it makes essential vitamins like the B vitamins. It protects us from bad bacteria. It helps our immune system. So if we don't protect that part of the body, what's going to happen?
So we start to see what's really prevalent and happening in our modern world, right? So listing some of the key things that people struggle from, and these are things that are absolutely related to not protecting our microbiome. Number one, anxiety and depression. Right? We know anxiety and depression are prevalent and going through the roof. It's affecting people of all kinds of ages. Anxiety and depression are now understood to be a gut-brain axis problem, meaning having a dysfunctional microbiome is at the root cause of that. So anyone that is listening to this, that is suffering from anxiety, that's suffering from depression, or your family members are, know that you have to pay attention to your gut in order to make improvements in that area of your life. We know metabolic syndrome is heavily driven by a dysfunctional microbiome, right? So obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, everything under that metabolic syndrome spectrum, all of those are initiated by a dysfunctional microbiome. We know autoimmune and other immune conditions. So think about most common things like allergies and asthma and food sensitivities, right? So if people are listening to this and they're like, my kid has all these allergies, I can't eat a huge variety of food, my asthma is really bad. All of those are microbiome dysfunction driven. And then finally, you look at things like your skin issues, right? So eczema, psoriasis, acne, aging of the skin, so fine lines and wrinkles, all of those can be traced back to disruption in your microbiome. So those are just some examples of some of the most common things that people are dealing with on a day-to-day basis, and they have no idea that it traces back to a dismantling of their microbiome.
Now, you talked about depression. There's something called psychobiotics. Can you talk about what that is and how that could maybe help people with depression?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so depression from a molecular standpoint can be really looked at as a dysfunction of serotonin, which is the happy hormone that we have in our central nervous system, and also dopamine, which is the hormone that kind of rewards you for doing the right things, right? That's what makes you feel happy when you make the right choices or you encounter people that you care about or good things happen in your life. When you have no serotonin or serotonin is not functioning properly or low levels of dopamine, not only can you not feel happy about things, but you have a general depressed outlook on life. And that's where it starts to really make an impact on people. Now, psychobiotics are really fascinating because, as it turns out, there's been discoveries showing that microbes in the gut actually improve serotonin and dopamine function in the brain. And so a true psychobiotic is one that can be ingested as a probiotic. It gets into the gut, and through its unique function in the gut, it actually improves serotonin and dopamine function in the brain. And it also reduces inflammation in the brain. And one more thing, you know, a psychobiotic that I've worked on for a number of years through University College Cork in Ireland, they also discovered that these psychobiotics can actually change your brainwave activity. When you encounter stress, it can put you in a low-frequency brainwave, which makes it much easier to deal with the stressor, which is exactly what happens if you're really good at meditation. You're able to tap into that low-frequency brainwave. So psychobiotics are incredibly powerful.
Is psychobiotics something we could buy over the counter if we want to help improve this part of our life?
You absolutely can. Yeah, there's a couple of really great dietary supplements. What you want to look for is a strain called Bifidobacterium longum 1714. That is the most...
Repeat that again, please.
Yeah, Bifidobacterium longum. So you may see it as B longum, L-O-N-G-U-M, 1714. And if you just put that in Google, you'll find a couple of different products that have it. And those products have about 10 clinical trials on mood disorders like anxiety, depression, and also sleep. Because the other thing that's happening, if you can't get yourself out of this cycle of anxiousness and depression, you also can't sleep, which means you can't recover your brain adequately at night.
And you talked about serotonin. Isn't most of the serotonin made in the gut?
It is. So in fact, there's two components. So at number one, about 90% of all serotonin in the body is made in the gut. We used to think that all of it's made in the brain, but it's not. It's actually 90% made in the gut. Now, the serotonin that's made in the brain actually is made from an amino acid called tryptophan. And most of the tryptophan, 90% of the tryptophan that makes its way to the brain is also made in the gut. So without adequate gut production of tryptophan and serotonin, you just don't have functioning of serotonin in the brain. And a leaky gut can actually cause a leaking through of a toxin that interferes with serotonin binding in the brain. So even if you're making enough, if your gut is leaky, you may not bind the serotonin effectively to even use it properly. So we cannot ignore the gut in these conditions.
Now, do we need to eat foods that contain tryptophan?
Actually, we don't. What's interesting about it is some of the latest studies show that dietary tryptophan contribute less than 10% to the amount of tryptophan that we use, to the type of tryptophan we use in the central nervous system. Most of the tryptophan that we use in the central nervous system is actually synthesized by microbes in the gut. They actually make tryptophan that goes to the brain. And we have this gut-brain connection. Our gut is intimately connected to the brain and vice versa. And microbes in your gut have full access to your brain. They can send neurotransmitters, compounds, immunological factors, all of that directly to your brain to influence your brain without your voluntary choice.
So we're coming up to the break, but let's talk about in the last 50 seconds or so, if you could tell us some of the things that we're doing to ourselves that damage the microbiome.
Yeah, the most important things are low diversity in our diet, right? We don't eat very diverse diet anymore. Our ancestors used to eat upwards of 600 different types of foods annually. The average American probably eats about 15. And so our diversity in our diet's really poor. Our relationship with the outer environment, we don't spend enough time outdoors in natural environments. We take too much antibiotics. We abuse antibiotics too much. We consume too many foods that are loaded with pesticides, herbicides, and antimicrobials. Just those things alone have a huge damage to the microbiome. And the last one, which may be the biggest, is stress.
We're talking with Kiran Krishnan. We're coming up to a break. We'll be right back.
MacuHealth, your science-born and tested solutions for visual performance, macular degeneration, and dry eye syndrome. New products coming soon. Embrace the science.
We're back with Kiran Krishnan, microbiologist, gut health pioneer. You could find him on his Instagram, his Instagram, Kiran Biome, his Instagram.com, Kiran Biome, Linktree, Kiran Biome, and at microbiomelabs.com. Kiran, when we were coming up to the break, we were talking about things that damage the microbiome. So I just want to make sure that people at home are really clear of what the things that damage the microbiome. And I want to talk about antibiotics and food. I don't think people realize that 80% of the antibiotics that are used in our country are actually in the food.
That's exactly right. And in fact, in animal products, for example, right, we in the meat industry, they use antibiotics in cows and pigs and so on, and chickens, of course. Not only do the antibiotics service to try to reduce mortality rates in those animals, but they're also using it to help those animals gain weight faster so they can shorten the growth time and they can sell more animals in a given year, right? So antibiotics make the animals fat. And you're going to carry some of that into the actual food that people eat. And most of those antibiotics have not been tested adequately in humans because they're using them in agriculture. But we are consuming those, right? And then not to mention the antibiotic runoff into the water system and then our exposure to that water system and to drinking. We gain a lot of exposure to antibiotics in the system. Now, on top of that, even the CDC estimates that at least 50% of the antibiotic prescriptions that are given by doctors are unnecessary. Often they're given for viral infections. You know, someone goes in for cold and flu and they're starting to make demands. They want some medicine. They want to feel better. The doctor writes a prescription for an antibiotic, even though that's not going to help the individual. So we're getting lots of exposure to antibiotics that have a devastating effect. And probably the worst antibiotic and the most prevalent is the herbicides and pesticides, the Roundups of the world, right? They are not only really prevalent because they're in the food and water system, but they also specifically kill good bacteria more than they kill bad bacteria. Other antibiotics kill everything. These ones selectively kill good bacteria more than bad.
How about mouthwash?
You know, mouthwash is one of the worst things you can do. If you listen to Dr. Nathan Bryant, who does a lot of work on nitric oxide. So nitric oxide is a really important gas that your immune system uses, your vascular system uses for dilation, for getting blood all throughout the body. Your immune system uses it to protect you against pathogens. Most of the nitric oxide is produced by microbes in the mouth that grow in good numbers overnight. So when you wake up in the morning, you get adequate nitric oxide production so you can spread blood all over your body and so on and have good perfusion. Now, Dr. Bryant says that if you wake up in the morning and you rinse your mouth with mouthwash and then you go down to the gym and you exercise for 30 minutes, you've actually completely negated all the benefits of that exercise by that 30 seconds of mouthwash use.
You know, there's something called proton, there's a drug called proton pump inhibitors. Nexium, Prilosec, Prevacid, Protonix. You know, a lot of people that have GERD or heartburn are taking these medications. And I think when they first came out, if you read the label, it's supposed to be, you know, maybe for 8 weeks and then try to get off it. But people are on these for years. What is that doing to our microbiome?
Yeah, and proton pump inhibitors are one of the most devastating things to the microbiome. And in fact, one of the biggest issues is many of them are now over the counter. You know, you don't even need a prescription anymore. You can just go pick it up. And so people use it forever. So what those are doing is they're dramatically reducing the amount of acid that's made in the stomach, right? And when you dramatically reduce the amount of acid that's made in the stomach, what happens is a lot of the microbes that you swallow in your mouth and from food sources and all that throughout the day will end up going to the small intestine in a viable state, meaning they're alive and they're functioning. And that means that they're going to corrupt the environment in your small intestine. There's a number of studies that have shown that that can lead to things like liver damage and liver failure. It leads to a known condition called SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, which is a big component of IBS. So it's driving IBS in lots of people. We now know that it also drives significant inflammation where you increase your risk for things like heart disease and metabolic syndrome, right? So just disruption of your natural stomach acid alone can screw up your whole ecosystem in your digestive tract and leave you with all this significant risk of chronic disease.
And before we get to solutions, that leaves us, we have to talk about leaky gut. Tell us what leaky gut is, and is it a real phenomenon? For years, the conventional medical doctors would deny leaky gut, but is it real? And what does it do to us?
You know, fortunately, we live now in a time where there's so much mounting evidence that even allopathic conventional doctors cannot deny that leaky gut exists. Now, the scientific term for it is intestinal permeability or barrier dysfunction or metabolic endotoxemia, right? So it's very well established in literature. In fact, the NIH and American Heart Association, American Diabetic Association have all published on it. So here's what's essentially happening in the most simplistic format. Your intestines, all 26, 27 feet of it, are supposed to be selectively permeable, meaning it's supposed to let in things like food and nutrients, but not let in things like toxins and pathogens and so on. What happens in leaky gut is that you have a disruption to the ecosystem, the microbiome, of your lining of your gut. The microbiome controls the barrier function of the gut. So the walls, if you will, and all the protective mechanisms. And when the microbes get dismantled, the beneficial microbes, the leakiness increases dramatically, meaning it's no longer selectively permeable, it's totally permeable. So yes, nutrients are going in, but in addition to that, you've got things like toxins moving in all day long. You've got viruses, and viral particles and bacterial particles and whole microbes going through. So you've got all of these things leaking through your digestive system, that surface area of the tennis court we talked about. Imagine all of that surface area letting in toxins into your system. Those toxins end up in circulation and they drive a tremendous amount of inflammation. Right. There was a 2015 publication in the Frontiers of Immunology that showed that leaky gut was the number one cause of morbidity and mortality worldwide. It's the number one killer worldwide because it's the foundation of most chronic illnesses.
So things leak through the gut and then our immune system starts. Now, how does that relate to autoimmune disease? So things leaking around, things are floating around, and now we're getting autoimmune disease secondary to the leaky gut. How does that work?
Yeah, you know, there's something called a bystander effect, right? So when things leak through, and then you just imagine you've got toxins spreading around throughout your body on the inside, your immune system's now activated and trying to find these toxins, find these viruses, these microbes that shouldn't be in there, and attack them. Now, there's a part of your immune system called the innate immune system. These are the first actors in the immune system. They're the fastest to get to the site of action. The only problem with them is they essentially use like a blowtorch to blowtorch everything in the area, right? So they don't know what is affecting the body. They just know that a general area where the effect is. So they show up quickly, they turn on the blowtorch, they start blowtorching everything in the area. What they end up doing inevitably is damaging your own tissue as well. Then these other cells come along and they try to figure out what within that area was the actual target to present that target to the next set of your immune system, which is called the adaptive immune system. Now, these microbes that present what may be the target to your adaptive immune system sometimes will accidentally pick up your own tissue and your own proteins and present it erroneously. So then the next phase of your immune system, your adaptive immune system, may accidentally think it's your own cell type that's the target and start producing antibodies against your own cells. So that's called a bystander effect because your own tissue is an innocent bystander in this blowtorching war, if you will, that's going on against all of those toxins. So when you have that level of immunological response throughout your body, these mistakes will inevitably happen. And that will set you off on this path of autoimmunity.
Wow, that's a fantastic explanation. I really appreciate that. Thank you for that. So let's talk about, all right, we have people at home, they have autoimmune disease. Most people that have one autoimmune disease have two or three autoimmune disease, probably because of the mechanism that you just spoke about. That's most likely. Now, what can we do to help people? What's the treatment? How can we reverse leaky gut? How can we reverse and make the microbiome better?
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it, right? Because it's an ecosystem, you can always make it better. So everyone that's listening there, know that you can always improve your health. It doesn't matter how far gone it seems to be, right? So here are some basic things that we have to follow, some tenets that we have to follow. Number one is we have to increase diversity in the gut microbiome. And diversity will start to repair a lot of the damage, right? So how do you do that? Well, you do that by increasing the diversity of your diet. So you try to add in some new foods on a weekly basis. It could be a new vegetable, a new fruit, a new source of lean meat that you haven't eaten before. And of course, try to get the cleanest versions. Try to get organic if you can, right? Try to get ones with the lowest level of exposure of pesticides. Doing slow food. So if you can get it from a marketplace, that's better than getting it from a big grocery store, right? So if you can go to a farmer's market, for example, and pick up some produce that's been grown locally, that's great. right? So diversifying your diet is one thing. Number two is getting outside more prescriptively. So going outside in nature, going for hikes, going for walks on the beach if you're on the coast, immersing your feet, for example, in natural soil, you know, touching trees and rocks and bushes and all that, and getting the microbes in the environment into your system. Number three is to reduce stress. Stress is a major source of dysbiosis or imbalance in your microbiome. So, you know, try to do some meditation, try to do some mindfulness work, take a psychobiotic, which will dramatically help with your stress issues, right? And then another thing is you could get a dog. In fact, studies show that households with dogs have people with better, more robust microbiomes and lower immune issues as well.
So let's continue on. How could we help people to stop leaky gut and prevent the prevent us from destroying our own microbiome?
What can we do? Absolutely. So let's do a quick review. One is diversification of the diet, which we talked about earlier, where you add in more foods into your diet on a weekly basis. One of the easy things you can do with that is actually go to an ethnic grocery store. That's one thing I like to do around here. Go to an Asian market, a Middle Eastern market. You'll find, you know, roots and tubers and vegetables that you don't find at your normal grocery store. And just add one of those into one or two meals throughout the week. It will absolutely improve the diversity of your microbiome. And then, of course, being more diligent about getting outside in nature.
Let me interrupt you for 1 second. How about kombucha? Yeah. Tell me about kombucha. Good, bad, or not so good?
Now, if you can make kombucha at home the traditional way, then it's absolutely fine. The problem is most kombucha that's commercial, they don't even finish the fermentation appropriately. And to make it taste better, they'll add a bunch of sugar and things like that. So kombucha in most retail facilities are probably not going to be that great for you. But if you can make kombucha or kefir, for example, at home, there's recipes all over online. That's a fun task to do with the family. And it can be really beneficial to your health if you make it the right way. You know, and that, so those fermented foods could be really a fun way to diversify your diet as well. The thing about being outside, one of the things I recommend to people is that if you go outside, you go for a walk or a hike, for example, in a natural environment, one of the ways to enhance the effect is to eat outside, right? So take a sandwich with you, a fruit or something that you can snack on as you're going through on a hike. Touch things like the trees and the sticks and rocks and pick things up and examine them and then sit down and eat in nature. And don't sterilize your hands before doing that, right? That's the most natural connection that we have with the outside environment, which helps our gut microbiome. We talked about getting a dog. Households with dogs tend to have higher diversity in their microbiome and lower immune dysfunctions. Then the other thing you can do is intermittent fasting. As it turns out, fasting for a period of time increases the diversity of your microbiome. So I personally do a 16-8 fast almost every day where I go for about 16 hours without eating. That's normally from about 8 or 9 p.m. till about noon the next day. And then I eat all my food for the day in that 8-hour feeding window. That's a relatively simple way to start it. And you can do that and it'll enhance the diversity of your microbiome. Spore-based probiotics can be extremely helpful. So if you Google spore-based probiotics, especially with leaky gut, you'll find solutions that can really help diversify your microbiome. And then last two things I'll mention that's really important. Number one is getting adequate prebiotic and fibers into your diet. Keep in mind that the vast majority of microbes in your large intestine feed off of fibers and prebiotics. Right. So if you just Google soluble and insoluble fibers, you'll find all kinds of foods that are rich in soluble and insoluble fibers. If you can increase the intake of that on a daily basis, it'll absolutely impact your health. And then prebiotics, you want to supplement those. The best prebiotics are things called oligosaccharides, right? That's a big, long word. But if you think of the abbreviation FOS or GOS or XOS, those are abbreviations for different types of oligosaccharide prebiotics that are incredibly powerful at diversifying your gut. And the last thing I would recommend is try not to sterilize your environment, right? So you don't have to have that spick and span chlorine smell clean on every surface of your house, right? Certain areas you might want to sterilize, a kitchen area where you've had raw meat, or your toilet, things like that. But most surface areas don't have to be sterilized. You want to build a healthy ecosystem of microbes in your environment. Just doing those things alone and stress management, I mentioned earlier, psychobiotics can help. Adding all those together, you'll start to develop a robust microbiome.
With probiotics, how do you know how many species to get and how many in the probiotics to get? You know, should you get them from Costco? Should you get them online from a really good company? Is there a difference? And where do they make probiotics from? Where does it come from?
You know, yeah, that's a really, really important question, because there's so many choices out there for people with probiotics, and it can be daunting to figure out what to do, right? My general recommendation for probiotics are to get probiotics that have clinical studies on the finished formula, because that's the only way you will know what those products do in your system. The vast majority of probiotics, unfortunately, don't have any studies on them at all. So most of what you get at the retail stores will not come with studies. So one easy area to look is, what are doctors using? What are practitioners using in practice? And they have good evidence that it works, right? So if you follow a lot of healthcare practitioners on places like Instagram, you'll see that the number one probiotic that they use is something called Megasporebiotic. That's a spore-based probiotic with about 15 published studies on it. And it's the most widely used among doctors. That's the safest route to go, because now you know all of these healthcare practitioners are using it. Now, most probiotic strains are either coming from human isolates, meaning they isolate them from the gut of the human digestive tract, and then they grow them up from there, or they're coming from dairy fermentation, or from the environment to a certain degree. And then they're growing the bacteria through fermentation, they're spray drying it to dry it out into a powder, and then they put it in a capsule. Right now, most bacteria through that process will start to die off. So many probiotics end up dying either in process or even just sitting there on the shelf. The spore-based probiotics have a unique capability of being robust.
And how about postbiotics?
Yeah, so postbiotics are really interesting. So postbiotics are now dead bacteria that have an impact on your system, right? Because certain types of dead bacteria can be very beneficial. Postbiotics are products like a product called PyloGuard, for example. This is a dead bacteria that can grab onto this known pathogen in the gut called Helicobacter pylori or H. pylori and take it out of the system. There are other postbiotics that are fermented microbes that also have some of the ferment with it. And that can be very soothing and lower inflammation in the gut. So some postbiotics can be really useful. I would focus on probiotics and prebiotics first as a go-to foundation to a healthy diet and exercise and sleep and all of that. You add probiotics and prebiotics to it, you're making a giant leap towards good health.
And prebiotics are food for the good bacteria in our gut. So that's why we need the prebiotics. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And I mentioned earlier that I always recommend people get prebiotics through supplementation. And keep in mind that prebiotics and fiber are different, right? So fiber are kind of is the roughage, things like psyllium husk if you were supplementing, but you can get fiber through lots and lots of food. And it's always great to increase fibrous rich foods in your diet, because then you're also diversifying your diet, which is great, right? So try to get as much fiber as you can through your food. But for the prebiotics, which are highly specialized carbon molecules that feed only good bacteria, try to get those through supplementation. Those are the ones I abbreviated as XOS, GOS, or FOS.
And gluten. We didn't talk about gluten. I talked a lot about that with Alessio Fasano. Gluten, is it as bad as we think it is?
You know, unfortunately, for most people in the States, it's pretty bad. And there's a few reasons for that. Number one, I think it's because so many people have damaged guts and microbiomes. So they're not as resilient, right? They can't handle the immunological effect that gluten creates in people's guts. Number two, most wheat sources come loaded with pesticides and herbicides, which further reduce your resilience and your ability to deal with the wheat source itself. And number three, in the US, we use a lot of hybridized grains. And these grains are hybridized to have very high gluten and gliadin protein content. So they tend to be much higher than native grains, right? So a lot of people that can't stand gluten here can go, for example, to Italy and have pasta and have bread and be better and be okay. So in it, someone like me that has worked a lot on having my gut robust and resilient, I can eat gluten from time to time and be fine. You know, my gut will repair itself. I won't really feel the effect. But for a lot of people, if you're in the active healing mode, it's probably good to stay away from it.
And lectins, good or bad in 10 seconds.
Yeah. Lectins, not as much of a problem as we used to think. You don't have to go through a lot to try to avoid it. But if you're in a healing mode and you want to be diligent, it's something, another thing to look into.
Well, I want to thank Kiran Krishnan for joining me today. Microbiologist, gut health pioneer. If people want to find out more about you, about your company, how can they do that?
Yeah, just follow me at Kiran Biome on Instagram, KiranBiome. I try to engage with people as much as I can, give them direction of things to look at for their health and wellness.
This is Dr. Kerry Gell for Open Your Eyes Radio on AM 1280 The Patriot. We'll be back next week with another exciting interview. Thank you for joining us.
Your eyes and your vision are under attack. Damaging blue light from the sun, your phone, your computer, your tablet, even light bulbs and car headlights is constantly bombarding you. The good news is our eyes actually already have a line of defense to counter the effects of blue light. This defense is made up of three pigments called carotenoids. MacuHealth with MicroMicell, the only supplement with the exclusive patent on all three macular carotenoids and MicroMicell technology.
Fitting multifocal contact lenses presents a big opportunity to meet patient needs while growing your practice. Alcon is your partner not only with our innovative portfolio, but through e-learning. Learn to enhance your multifocal strategy today with the Alcon Experience Academy.
OIE Broadcasting is the emerging leader in social media. We use scientific entertainment to drive more patients into your office. Visit OIEBroadcasting.com and sign up today.